Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
Well, this is episode 155 with Demetrius Ball. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Demetrius Ball, we explore a number of interesting topics like how Demetrius tells the story of his school through a podcast, building ownership within the staff regarding restorative practices, and are you really listening and reflecting on the conversations you are having. Today's podcast upgrade is 7 Secrets of Restorative Practice. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/155-Demetrius-Ball or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Are you attending the Mastery Leadership Institute this summer in Salt Lake City? You know, educators are great. They're great at collecting data. But how do your teachers use that data in real time? Learn how to stop just collecting data and to start using it at the Mastery Leadership Institute. Learn more about this event, including the locations and dates, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. All right, well, hey there, better leaders. I am running another experiment, recording a podcast live so people can watch right now. We're recording actually episode 155, which releases July 25th this summer. But I wanted to bring you this content now because some people on Facebook asked about restorative practices specifically, and Demetrius knows restorative practices. I consider him an expert. He's in the mastermind, and let me tell you, I mean, you're going to definitely get so many key takeaways from this conversation. So I am really, really excited to connect with Demetrius on the show today. And let's get into his bio, and we'll have a fun conversation from there. Demetrius Ball is a current AP at Daugherty Valley High School. Demetrius served in the Army before becoming an educator, and he met his wife in college as a freshman. They both attended West Point, and together they have 4 incredible kids. This year, he has become passionate in long-distance running. Demetrius, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Danny. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right, so let's start at the beginning. I love to ask people, what was your story in terms of getting excited and interested in education? So, yeah, why are you an educator?
So I had some amazing teachers and coaches and a principal that really inspired me. Growing up, I moved to a small town in Northwest Ohio at the end of my 6th grade year, and I wasn't super social. I wasn't athletic really at all, but, 7th grade, one of my buddies talked me into going out for the football team, and I played in 4th and 5th grade, but I didn't like it because I was a bigger kid and I had to play offensive line, and I just didn't like exercising really at all. But long story short, my 7th grade coach was amazing. Jim Barron, he had so much fun with us out there, and then I got further and further into athletics there. And then I had the same principal from 7th grade all the way through senior year of high school, and she was amazing. She was out there, seemed like all the time in the halls and just really active. She was like my mom when I moved to that small town, Findlay, Ohio. And Dr. Crates was amazing. She was my mentor. And I always dreamed of coming back and taking her place as principal there.
So, if you didn't necessarily like working out back then and, this offensive line stuff and all that, now you have this passion for long distance running. So what happened?
So, yeah, I would say it really started this school year. One of my academic counselors, she is a graduate of the University of Michigan. And if you know anything about Michigan and Ohio, I grew up a huge Ohio State fan. My dad's Ohio State grad. I mean, I can remember the first Ohio State football game that I went to, just like it's coursing through my veins, Ohio State. And so, you know, we got into a friendly little rivalry, kind of talking trash to each other a little bit. And then prior to Ohio State Michigan football game, we did a little competition and we're like, okay, well, let's see who can run the most over the course of 2 months. I think we started September 11th, keeping track of our distance. And through that competition, I really enjoyed doing long distance running. And so basically with the competition, whoever lost had to wear the other team's school colors. So of course I'm a little bit competitive. So I won and my counselor, Jessica, had to wear Ohio gear all week before the Ohio State Michigan football game.
Yeah. And if listeners aren't familiar with that rivalry, it's not such a big deal. They do that all the time. Ohio State fans wear Michigan stuff. Michigan fans wear Ohio State stuff. So even as a graduate of University of Illinois, and growing up, you know, outside of Chicago, watched a lot of those football games, and I loved both schools. Supposedly, they're rivals, you know, for U of I. That's not true, because in a rivalry, you actually have to win games from time to time. And so, you know, I don't think a lot of U of I fans would admit this, but I'm going to, because there's no shame in my game. Like, I always root for Ohio State and Michigan, because both teams, I mean, they're good. They have proud traditions, and our tradition at U of I is only losing. So, you know, when the Big Ten makes it to the playoffs, I have to root for a Big Ten team. And that's normally, usually a default to Ohio State or Michigan.
Yeah, those are two great programs to root for. Obviously, Ohio State's a little bit better, but, you know, it's great. It's great. I love Big Ten football.
Just a little better. So, Demetrius, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
I would have to say that I really consider myself a servant leader. Just, you know, my experience in the military, just learning about what it takes to be a leader and someone that's focused not on your own personal success, but on the success of your entire team, your entire unit, your entire group. And I've just had that mindset for so long now. And I just look at every situation and see, you know, where's the opportunity to serve others in my capacity, whether I'm, you know, just another member of the team or if I'm leading. I'm always looking for opportunities to help those around me, because I figure, and, you know, I think it's been proven really that the better that you can make the folks around you, the better your experience is going to be, the better the results are going to be for whatever the mission and purpose of your organization is.
Hey, y'all, I'm Casey Bell of the Google Teacher Tribe podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
And with that military experience you have, and I forgot to mention it earlier, thank you. I really appreciate your service to the country. Were there specific things you all did that now you actually are able to engineer and orchestrate within the school setting to build, you know, the concept of team? Were there any moments that you always go back to, you know, within your time at West Point or in the Army that, you know, really, I guess, shaped this idea of teamwork?
I would have to say the concept of cooperation is huge. Everyone's got their strengths and weaknesses. And as a member of Army football team, as a member of just the Corps of Cadets overall, that whole concept of cooperation just really kind of seeped through as one of the big takeaways for me, because I wasn't a super strong student academically when I got to West Point, and just realizing that I had to rely on other people's strengths. You know, it was really just a humbling experience, just to go into an environment where it's super competitive, but at the same time, everyone is working for one common mission, to you know, become an officer in the Army. And I think that's probably one of the biggest takeaways, just realizing that, wow, you know, I can't do this thing on my own. I am not going to be the best that I can be if I just try and focus on myself independently. Because as I mentioned, you know, when I wasn't an athlete or team player when I was growing up, you know, I was just kind of doing things on my own, kind of introverted, not socializing. But as I got older, I realized how important it was that if I was going to accomplish anything, that I needed to rely on other people and they needed to be able to rely on me. So I think that piece was really important to me developing as a leader.
Got it. And do you have any routines or rituals that really help you have an impactful day when you're leading at your school?
So we're recording this at 4:15 or whatever it is in the morning.
It's 1:20 by me. I don't know what you're complaining about.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to get my day started. I get up early. I've got young kids and they like to get up early. So I'll get up early in the morning, take my quiet time and just kind of reflect, do my devotional. And then, like I said, I've been getting into running. So when I'm on my run days, I like to be on the road by 4:30. And so usually take about an hour, you know, if I get up to 6 miles or so during the week, come back and get things going. But, you know, just being able to get out there, get active mentally and physically, I'm ready to rock and roll for the day.
And just to clarify for viewers and listeners, it's 1:20 p.m., not 1:20 a.m. So that's why we're having a laugh about that. Are you the type of guy, are you laying out your workout clothes, shoes, any type of, you know, energy drinks or gels that you're going to use the night before, or are you just grabbing that when you wake up?
Yeah, I grab that when I wake up. I usually, as funny as it sounds, I usually sleep in my workout clothes, and then, you know, my socks, just, you know, grab them from the drawer, and then all my shoes and reflective gear is in the garage. So I come down in the garage, I grab that stuff and get going.
Yeah, that's next level. I know a lot of athletes, specifically in college, because they're just hurting for sleep and they have classes and they're trying to balance all that and their commitment to the team, sleep in their workout gear so that they could just get up and get to practice. So that's still serving you well, too. I'm curious about unplugging from work. You have those four incredible kids and a wonderful wife, and I know you really treasure the time that you have with them as husband or father. And so how do you unplug from work? Or if you don't unplug, you know, what's the biggest challenges for you?
You know, I would say that it has been a struggle since I became a connected educator when I started getting into Twitter back in 2014. And the more and more I got involved with Twitter chats and, you know, on Voxer and Voxer groups, I really struggled with that probably over the last, I would say, 2 years or so, struggled a lot with it. And my wife was just, I think, you know, over the course of a couple of weeks, she was like, "You were on your phone way too much." And I was like, "I agree." So now, at least over the last 2 years, year and a half, I've when I come home, usually I'll just take my phone in my pocket, plug it in and leave it on the counter. And then, you know, I'm engaged with the kids and my wife and we're, you know, cooking, doing bath time and all those types of things. So I don't sleep with my phone near me. It stays in the kitchen pretty much once I get home, and I will participate in an occasional Twitter chat in the evening. But, you know, that's an hour or less. And I'm right back to the family trying to engage with them.
Yeah. So I hear you having a routine of plugging it in, leaving it on the counter. But then at other times, you know, I guess choosing ahead of time, this is the chat I'm going to participate in or whatever, and just giving it your attention for that period of time. And once it's over, you're not going down the, you know, the hole of social media and getting dragged into that.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I know you love to tell stories, and telling the story of your school, I want to unpack a bit, you know, how do you do that? And I also know that you started a podcast to tell the story of your school too. So let's start first generally, how are you telling the story of your school? And then secondarily, let's get into the podcast.
Sure. So, you know, again, I mentioned the Twitter chats that I participate in, and a lot of it is, I really enjoy it because I'm able to reflect on what's going on in my school and my school environment, and those types of things. So with the Twitter chat, you know, it's mostly focused on general experiences. And so I'm able to just take general things that are happening and tweeting those out. But also, I really like to get into classrooms and take pictures of what the students and teachers are doing. And just to share those out, that reminds me, I need to get back to doing that a little bit better. But yeah, I think it's awesome to be able to show the products that our students are producing, the lessons that our teachers are coming up with, the different activities with collaboration and restorative justice practices that several of our teachers are doing. I just think it's so important to broaden the audience to tell them what our school story is and the things that the great things that we have going on. And, you know, the podcast comes into play because last year in the state of California, your school has to certify that they're, you know, meeting all the requirements to be accredited. And I came to my school right as the report was almost being finalized. And one of the big conclusions was that there's this misconception between what actually goes on in school and what others perceive as going on in the school. So there's like a disconnect in the communication piece, what's actually happening and what people perceive. My school is a big school. We had over 3,000 students last school year. This year, we're over 3,200. And by 2020, we're expected to have about 3,500 kids. And it's big. And the school is on, this is year 11 of Doherty Valley High School. And when the school was established, the focus was on academics. And, you know, based on the community, the school grew with the community. So it the community was being built and our school was built. And so you have a lot of folks that came in to our neighborhood wanting to be a part of this academic, this high academically achieving school. So, you know, that's our reputation, is that kids at Doherty Valley take 6 and 7 AP classes. They go to these big name schools after high school. And we're so much more than that. And so with the podcast, I've been able to tell our community and show our community that we are so much more than just this academic standout school.
Yeah, and sending them to big name schools like Ohio State, hopefully you're not sending any of them to Michigan, correct?
Well, actually, Michigan is pretty popular, and I understand that. We have, you know, a couple here and there go to Ohio State. But what's been really disappointing is I got a lot of kids that want to go to the Naval Academy. That really just hurts my heart.
That is too funny. All right. Hey, so, you know, you're telling the story through the podcast. Are you seeing that that's bridging the gap? You created it to try to clear up misconceptions or misinformation or just to get out a general understanding of how you operate as a school. Do you see that working for you?
You know, I actually do. It's one of those things where it's kind of a grassroots thing. And, you know, I'm doing my best to communicate to people that, hey, you know, we're doing this podcast, take a listen. And then I would say the shows average about probably about 20 or so listens, about 15 or so downloads. So it's a slow process, but I'm having conversations and I'm engaging our parent groups. I'm engaging members of the community. We got our first sponsor back in January.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about this?
Well, I don't remember. I definitely said what, because I'm surprised. So that's great. If you told me, I forgot.
Yeah. So just to go to the sponsorship thing, there's a local orthodontist, Crow Canyon Orthodontics, Dr. Arish, give him a shout out. But basically, his brother graduated from my high school, and he graduated from another local high school, and my son had braces, and when he found out that I was working at the school, he's like, if there's ever anything that I can do to help support the school, please let me know. And I think we were communicating over a mastermind, and I asked you about the sponsorship, and you sent me the little two-pager that you have for getting sponsors. So I adjusted it and geared it towards what I was looking for, our much smaller scale podcast. And, you know, I went the kind of the big name option, price point option. He was like, yeah, it's on the spot. I wrote the check. And I was like, awesome. Yes. So yeah, we had a sponsor, and then I'm not trying to make any money off the podcast. So I donated it to our girls' wrestling program. We've got about 10 girls on our wrestling team. And so they've got their own wrestling team. And our coach, Bob Clemente, early on, he's like, you know, I'm really trying to figure out how we can do this just to keep the wrestling sport going. And so I want to have our own girls' team. And I was like, okay, you know what? I love that. So, you know, I reached out to Dr. Arish, and I was like, all right, can you help us out? Can you help our girls' wrestling team? So yeah, so that was pretty cool.
Good for you. You know, and that's the thing, like, even as I've been building this platform, Better Leaders, Better Schools, I have to constantly tell myself the answer's always no if you don't ask, right? And it's just like that. I don't know if it's Jordan or Kobe. At this point, it could be either or, but you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? And so good for you for asking somebody within the community. And what a way to build a partnership too, because now his name's getting out there. It's building his brand identity, giving back, but it's also helping out in the case of your school, you know, the girls wrestling team, which is pretty neat. In terms of content, how are you deciding on what to share out to your community through the podcast?
I think the biggest thing is just finding interesting stories, interesting things that are going on at the school. I think folks just want to know that we're doing things that aren't, you know, the traditional path. I would say this morning I'm posting the show, what I interviewed our art teachers. Visual arts is big. They're into social media at our school. So I asked the teachers, you know, you want to sit down and kind of explain what goes on in your program, how it's growing, how can we get more kids involved in your program? You know, I mentioned that we have this reputation of everyone taking, you know, AP classes. Last week, I did an interview with one of our students, JP, and I love his schedule. He's got social justice. He's got careers in teaching. He's got dance. He's got athletic training, and he's a senior. And, wow. You know, he said these are, you know, I wanted a hands-on experience. And it's like, awesome. I love it because he's having a good time. You know, he wants to be a first grade teacher. And just to be able to get that message out there that, hey, you know, our kids don't just come and, you know, sit through AP classes or spend their entire, you know, weekend studying. We have a lot of different options for kids. And so I want to celebrate those things.
You're brilliant for doing it. Audio is clearly the future because podcasts, I mean, are continuing to grow. I think, you know, data shows that maybe around 20% of the U.S. population, just 20% listen to podcasts, and that increases every single year. And to give it, you know, a perspective of my show, that's over 200,000 downloads of a very small niche down show for school leaders. And then for your community, and I want to talk to you offline, either in the mastermind or just us one-on-one on how you can grow and impact more of your parents within the community. So we'll do that for sure. But what a great way to challenge people's assumptions that they may have regarding the school or the students, and to give a robust picture of these are our kids, these are their experiences or our teachers, and here's their plans. It's an incredible medium to tell the school's story. We're going to move on from this topic and go over to restorative practices. But last question with podcasts would be, any tips that you've learned, you know, creating a show for your community that, you know, listeners should consider before they start, or maybe they just started and it'll help them accelerate their growth a bit?
I would say finding a platform to host it. I did a presentation on podcasting a few weeks ago, and I think the biggest thing is record content, and then just about anything will get you some solid quality. I mean, the earbuds on your iPhone will work. You don't have to buy the super big microphone or, you know, have a special computer for it. Just focus on the content. You can record it anyway. And then I use Spreaker. Just, I don't know, sorry if I can't give them a shout out, but
you give everybody a shout out. It's all good.
okay. Yeah. So it's super easy to just upload your MP3 file there and, you know, blast it out to iTunes and all those other places. And that was the biggest struggle for me, was figuring out, how am I going to get this audio file out to the world so people can find it? And it's like you said, the audio space is what's blowing up right now. And I love it because you're able to build connection. You feel like you're a part of the story. I mean, that's why I love listening to Better Leaders, Better Schools, because I feel like, man, you know, that Danny Bauer guy, he's awesome. And all the great guests you have, I feel like part of the family.
Well, that's the secret of the show is, and you do this, you know, through your podcast, but you make that other person the hero, right? And you tell their story, and that makes a good show. And then to just be genuinely curious about what they do, you know, asking good questions. People love that. At least I do. And you'll reach the right type of people. But we absolutely learn through stories. I think about the best teachers that I ever had, and it's the ones that were very creative in how they presented the material. And it wasn't just like, here's the facts, whatever. There were stories behind it, and that stuck in my head. The last thing I want to say, and this is to all the listeners, to you too, Demetrius. So we have podcasts, and we get that. And some shows, you know, like 15, 20 minutes. Like, how long is yours normally?
I try and go no longer than 20 minutes.
Right. And so that, I think that's pretty popular. My show, 30 minutes to 60 minutes. I mean, I would do it if the guests had time and I thought people would listen. I would do 4-hour long shows. I'm telling you right now, I would, because I love it so much. But here's where I want to challenge all the listeners and you, Demetrius. I want everybody to imagine this. Don't close your eyes because a lot of you are driving, but Amazon has the Echo, okay? And it's, believe me, it's gonna blow up. There's a lot of people that already have it, and Apple has something coming out as well too. And picture this, like, you could do Alexa skills. You wake up and you say, Alexa, play my morning briefing. And Alexa will have a number of shows that are bite-sized content. So I'm talking 5 minutes or less. 10 minutes, you're really pushing it, but 5 minutes or less. And what if for a school or a district, you had a daily Monday through Friday, here's some just real important information, what's happening within the school and the district, and some things that I just want to put on your radar and connect with you with as a principal, as a superintendent, et cetera. 5 minutes or less, maybe some staff shout outs, student highlights, whatever. You can, you know, dream about what that content would look like. But when people wake up that have that Amazon Echo, and believe me, a lot of people are going to have it, they say play the morning briefing and it's your school's reminder. Here's the big events coming up. What an incredible way to connect with your community. And it's going to be as simple as just creating it. And people saying, play my morning briefing, you know, you'll have to teach them how to subscribe to that, but that's super easy. And if I could help any school leaders, school districts set that up, there's a one-time, let's get it set up type of investment. After that, you're up and running and you'll be good to go. And I think that'd be a very creative and interesting way to tell your school's story in a daily briefing through the Amazon Echo. All right. But now that that's to the side, you are the hero of the show. And I brought you on specifically not only to talk about podcasts, to talk about restorative justice or restorative practices, depending on where you're at and what you call it. But let's start there. What started your interest in restorative practices?
My second to last year in the classroom before I got into admin, we had some shifting in the admin at my school, and I was a high school social studies teacher. And one thing that was going on was we had some conflicts going on within the student body. And one of the new assistant principals had experience with restorative practices and restorative justice. And so he got some of those students together. They sat down and had a circle. And, you know, initially it was a conflict between two students, but it kind of blossomed into all these other students had connections to it. And I think it got to a point where, you know, towards the end of the school year, we had these students that were like going to the assistant principal and saying, hey, we need a circle because we have some other things that are continuing to go on. And I just saw the power in the connection that these students had with each other and the growth and development that they had, along with the connection with this assistant principal that brought it to our school. And so I was like, no, let me look into this a little bit further. And I eventually was able to connect with him and learn a little bit more and do a lot of my own kind of training on restorative justice and restorative practices. So that's where the foundation started.
Hey, Danny Sunshine here, and I'd like to tell you a little more about the Mastery Leadership Institute taking place this summer in Salt Lake City. This event is an intensive 3-day professional development retreat facilitated by nationally recognized principals. Educators will be immersed in full-day workshops focused on strategies to effectively use data to target interventions, personalize learning, and evaluate instructional efficacy. True school transformation is only possible when educators are empowered to use the data they collect to immediately impact teaching and learning. Learn more about the Mastery Leadership Institute, including upcoming dates and locations, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. So now that you're running that, you know, quite a bit, what have been some of the big wins, I guess, working and using this model in your school?
I would say really the biggest thing is building a community. We've had, you know, I do a lot of mediation, sort of technical challenges, but I would say building connections and building relationships and getting to the root cause of what's going on in a situation. I think a lot of times when we go with the traditional punitive route, when something happens, we look at the surface that student A did action X. And as a result, we go to our traditional discipline model and we don't really look at the root cause. And I mean, especially it comes up with when it goes to suspensions. Suspensions don't really do a whole lot to fix whatever the situation is. You know, that student had, you know, something going on to cause them to do whatever they did. And when you take them out of the school setting, send them home for a couple of days, they come back. The real issue hasn't been addressed. And so what I'm seeing is just taking a more restorative approach is, you know, asking questions and trying to figure out what's going on. What caused you to do X, Y, and Z? I'm reading a book right now that's got a bunch of different scenarios. And, you know, it looks, we as administrators, again, or teachers, we look at the surface. We look at, oh, there was a fight. But we don't see that, you know, this fight is a result of some teasing that was going on, and it had been going on for the course of a day or two. And restorative practices really looks at, hey, how can we get to the root and get to all the students that might have been involved in the situation or the community that was impacted? Maybe something happens in a classroom. And, you know, usually if a disciplinary action occurs, and it doesn't just have to be discipline, any kind of situation occurs that impacts a group of people, you know, not just one. So just getting into that mindset is really important for restorative practices to take off and be successful.
You pointed out such an important idea, which is getting to the root of what's causing certain behaviors. I think suspensions and all that kind of stuff, you know, in the more traditional model, it works well for a school. It works well for the adults. It doesn't work well for the kids because it is. It's simple, you know, and in these zero tolerance, like, crazy ideas. You do X, here's your consequence. Okay, yeah, you've acted on and you've addressed a behavior, but has the behavior changed, right? And if we're really in the business of creating human beings that are going to be contributing to our society in a positive way, we have to take the time. We owe it to our kids to go the slower route, in my opinion. It's harder work. It is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's harder work. It's a slower process, but if you invest heavy on the front end of this restorative practices work, what I've seen, and I'm sure Demetrius would agree, that upfront cost causes less repetitive poor choices in the future. So it's a high upfront cost, but you have such a yield consecutively over a kid's tenure at your school. Or you could just go with the traditional model, keep doing detention, keep doing suspension, and that kid gets written up and does the same thing over and over again, 40, 50, 60, who knows, right? A lot of times because you've never addressed what's going on at the root. Let me ask you this, Demetrius, because this is a thing, like working with faculties, a lot of people are very comfortable and familiar with the way old things are done. And they hear about restorative practices and then circles. And, you know, now they think Demetrius is a hippie, even though he went to West Point and all this stuff. Why you want to talk to kids? Like, they deserve to be suspended. I need them out of my class, like all of that. How do you build consensus and build buy-in in terms of using restorative practices within your staff?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. It's a mindset shift. We tend to go to the traditional route, the easy route. Hey, this kid's messing up. Get him out of my class. Go to the principal's office. They'll deal with you there. But again, that student's not going anywhere. Like, even if they get suspended, they're coming right back to your class. Yeah. They're coming right back to your class. You know, it's the law. We can't just expel them for, you know, whatever a small situation might be. And so, you know, when I have those conversations, it's like, you know, that's one of the things that I bring up. Like, okay, I understand that you don't have a good relationship with this student and you want this to be fixed, but this student is part of your community. You've got them for 180 days or however long the school year is. We got to figure out a way for you guys to coexist. And so one of the things that we have what's called, they're called SWAT groups. It is based on the WASC report that we had last year, but these small groups that are identified different areas where we can improve as a school. And we have a small group that focuses on restorative justice and restorative practices. And we've got 8 teachers in there from a variety of different content areas, science, special ed, English department, social studies department, math department, and they're learning about the importance of building community. And when you have a strong community within your classroom, it's going to be really hard. You're going to be equipping yourself with the ability to understand who the students are and where they're coming from. And that goes a long way. There's going to be a less chance of you doing something that's going to disrupt the class or doing something negative in the classroom when you know the people that are in your class. You're going to feel bad if you make, you know, this student upset by some kind of comment. But at the same time, when you build a community through restorative practices, you're more prepared to actually confront those types of situations. When the teacher is facilitating restorative conversations, it's equipping the students with the tools to be able to say, hey, you know, Johnny, when you did this, you might not have intended to, but it really upset me. Can we have a conversation about how your actions or how your words impacted me? And not just me, but I think other people in the class might have been impacted as well. So can we talk about that? So we're laying that foundation right now with our group of teachers that are taking on restorative practices.
Yeah, well, I commend and admire the work that you're doing with restorative practices at your school. It's a tough thing to start, but I believe it's the right way to approach, you know, discipline and poor choices that kids make. shoot, adults make from time to time. I don't know about you, but I had teachers brought to circles before because kids felt, man, this teacher does not respect his or her students. And I want to talk about it in a safe place instead of going crazy in the class or, you know, acting out of frustration. I want to have a mature discussion. That was interesting to see and, you know, participate in those type of things. So that's great. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. In terms of restorative practices, like people that want to get started with it, where would you point them? Is there a specific book or article that you find useful or maybe video? How did you go on your learner's journey regarding this?
Sure. So initially, I just started typing in restorative justice into the Google search. But I would say Howard Zurr he's a huge asset. He's a leader within restorative justice, restorative practices. He's got, if you look for the Little Book of Restorative Justice, the Little Book series on restorative justice and restorative practices is a great, great resource. Ken Johnson, who is an author and teacher of restorative practices in Florida, he's got several books on restorative justice and restorative practices and how to integrate those into schools. Let's see, if you want to look at schools that are doing it right with restorative practices. Schools in Minneapolis. Minneapolis has a contract with their teachers union where they've incorporated restorative justice into their school system. Oakland Unified School District as well. Usually if you do a search on restorative justice in schools, Oakland Unified School District out here in California is going to come up as well because they're one of the few school districts that actually publishes the data on how they're seeing results because a lot of their schools are implementing restorative justice practices. If you follow the hashtag RJ League chat on Twitter, we do chat every Sunday. It's 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and we talk a variety of different topics when it comes to restorative justice. And we also have a Voxer group, and I'm pretty heavily involved in both of those. Hashtag RJ League chat. Victor Small is one of the facilitators of that group in the chat, and it's a great time just learning about different strategies. And again, it's all about community building, but I can send you some other things. But Victor put together a Padlet. He calls it the epic Padlet of restorative justice. And I'll share that with you as well, Danny, because there's so many books and videos, you know, print resources that folks can dig into. There's just so much and you can add to it, but it's a great resource. And I'll share that with the community as well.
Thank you. So we'll link up all that. Howard, Ken, the notes about Minneapolis, Oakland Unified, hashtag RJ League chat. You said that's 8 p.m. Eastern. Did you say Friday? I'm sorry if I got that wrong.
Sunday.
Okay.
Sunday. Yes.
But all this will be there for listeners and viewers of the show. So thank you. And we'll get that epic Padley as well. So I think to respect your time, let's close it out with that one big question I ask every guest. And I can't wait to hear how you're going to answer it. And that is, you know, you are building a school from the ground up, right? You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, Demetrius? And what would be your top three priorities?
Okay, I've been thinking about this one for a while. I would have to say, first, you know, we need staff members that believe in restorative practices, that are open to it. You know, they don't necessarily have to have the experience with it, but they have to be open to building a community. I don't want a school where suspension is the discipline model. I want us to be able to build a community, have conversations, and figure out appropriate consequences for a student when they do something wrong. You know, even when a teacher does something wrong, you know, just like you said, Danny, we need to be able to have those conversations and have that community where the students feel comfortable addressing, you know, a teacher in a positive and respectful way and saying, hey, you know, something's been bothering me. So that's one thing. I think it'd be huge if we'd be able to build a school starting there. Second, I would love to have every single course that is taught to be co-taught. You know, talk about an investment.
Yeah.
I think it'd be huge, you know, that, you know, our teachers don't have enough time to plan and, you know, reflect. And I think that if you've got two teachers in a classroom, they're able to facilitate more, have more conversations, they're able to collaborate more. I think collaboration is so powerful. And I think we get, you know, that whole traditional idea of silos, you know, folks get super comfortable with the things that they're doing. Sometimes they don't branch out, you know, I'm not going to say that every teacher, but I think just building that internal community where, you know, hey, I'm going to work with this teacher. My dream would be for it to be at least like 3 years that you have that collaborating teacher that you're working with. And, you know, you build a super strong program. You guys bounce ideas off of each other. You know, you take turns rotating, you know, who's facilitating conversations. But I think within that, that would also lend itself to project-based learning. I think that would be huge in my school environment as well. And then lastly, I would say, in the aspect of time, I would want to give more time back to our teachers. So I would say I would want a 4-day school week, and we take Wednesday as a collaboration day and a communication day. And why? Basically, half the day the teachers are able to collaborate with each other, and then the other half they're communicating with families or in whatever that looks like for them, just to inform the community what's going on in their classroom. Because I think, again, it's so important for us to tell our stories, that if we're plugging everyone in and letting them know what's going on, then we have a lot less conflicts and there's a lot less misconceptions about what's going on in the class and how a student can be successful. If you're being proactive and communicating that, a lot of things that might tend to go wrong, a lot of conflicts that arise between parents and teachers can be avoided if you're communicating proactively.
Love it. Thanks for that response, Demetrius. And thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
I would say, for parting words of advice, is take the time to listen and reflect on what goes on in your day. I didn't get the question about the class that doesn't exist, but that's what I would do. I would really recommend for folks to, you know, pay attention to the conversations that you're having, conversations that you're listening to, and the folks that you're interacting with, and take a little bit of time to reflect on it. What good did you hear? What bad did you hear? And how does that impact you? And how can you make someone else's situation better by simply reflecting?
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Demetrius. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com, type Demetrius in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Demetrius, thank you so much for adding so much value to the mastermind, number one. And number two, for taking time, getting up so early in California to record this podcast and do a Facebook Live. We'll see how, you know, people respond to it. But you are incredible, and just really appreciate everything you add to what we do.
Thank you so much, Danny. You're awesome.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.